From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I'm always looking for more places to tuck native plantings, and my current mission is along my property edges, where I'm adding a more complex layer of shrubs and small trees adjacent to the big old canopy level ones to increase habitat for beneficial insects and birds in particular. I've been turning to today's guest for suggestions, and now we want to share some of our ideas with you. More on garden-sized native woody plants to enhance the diversity of your landscape. But first, this message.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
Mark Wolf is director of Mountaintop Arboretum in the Catskills of New York, a 178-acre public garden that's open every day of the year and where managing native plant communities is the focus. Mark has a particular appreciation for small native trees that we too often overlook, and we'll talk about some of his favorites and also a palette of native shrubs to delight you and the bees and the birds. Hi, Mark. I'm so glad to talk on this fall day.
Hi, Margaret. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, it's like the earth is celebrating fall. I mean, it's cold and clear and beautiful up here, and the leaves are already changing color up here.
So you say up there, you're at 2,400 foot elevation. Is that correct?
Yeah, 2,400 feet in Tannersville, New York, which is
yes.
near Catskills. Yeah, which is near
yes.
Hunter Mountain, if that's helpful to people.
Yeah, for their GPS.
Right.
So I want to ask you to, before we get started talking trees and shrubs, I wanted to ask you for a quick sort of introduction to Mountaintop Arboretum, but also to say that you have this not so long ago built education center and
right.
Built from many species of tree, wood from many trees from around the property and nearby. And you did a book about it called 21 Trees, and about those 21 trees. And we're going to have a giveaway with the transcript of the show over on Away to Garden of a copy of that beautiful book
with great.
Photos by Rob Cardillo. So tell us, what is Mountaintop briefly?
Mountaintop Arboretum is a 178-acre public garden. And it started in 1977 with 6.5 acres. And over time, it's grown. We've become more native plant focused over the life of the Arboretum. And especially as you're talking about, the new education center is really a celebration of native plants, because we went through our forest and some generous neighbors who donated some trees too. And we have 21 different species of native trees that are represented in this beautiful timber frame structure. And the floors are also from trees from our forest.
Yeah.
And then that sort of bleeds out. That was sort of the inspiration for the landscape design that we did with landscape architect Jamie Purinton. And so the site itself, the 1 acre site we sit on is designed with rain gardens and plants native to the Catskills. Rain gardens, woodland edges, and bedrock outcrop of the three plant communities.
Mm. And so we recently did a New York Times garden column together, which was fun. And we focused on some of those plants that you grow and love there. I think you have 37 species of native trees on the property. Is that right? Do I remember that number?
Yeah, 37 species of trees that are native to the Catskills.
Wow.
And when we talk about the Catskills, there's a blue line that New York State created. It's called the Blue Line because on the maps, it's a blue line. And it's such an artificial, you know, line for us, but that's what we used to sort of decide what we wanted to we're doing a native tree trail also, so we're working on that. So what we call native to the Catskills is within the blue lines. So
okay.
There are trees that are native on our site that have been planted over the years. that are native to the Northeast, but we don't. That's not in the 37. Just okay. To be clear.
Right. To be clearly unclear. Yeah. Well, and the whole word native is a confusing word. And so just for those who are listening, who are in many other places, a lot of what's native to whether the Catskills or to New England or to New York State, where you and I both live and garden, many of those things and many of the things we're going to talk about today are native over a wider range, the eastern quarter of the country, the eastern third or even half, and some even farther afield that we're going to mention today. Some go down into Texas and some go out to Montana. So I'm going to give links with the transcript to range maps, you know, the native range maps of the plants we talk about, so that people can look and see, hey, is this appropriate for me? Just to add to it. So in that recent New York Times column we did together, we first sort of talked about some small native trees that gardeners mostly overlook in favor of maybe flashier, you know, flowering, you know, spring crab apples or whatever. And I know you wish we'd kind of slow down and notice a couple of these subtle beauties, like moosewood, for instance. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So yeah, these are trees that, you know, when you're driving by, they might not shout at you, but I think, you know, we're all thinking of how we reconnect with nature more. And I think we just need to spend a few more minutes looking at what's growing on our property or on our street, you know. So striped maple is a tree that is often overlooked. It is a tree of moist, rich, cool areas. So it may not do so well, say, down in New York City. It grows to, say, it can get up to 35 feet, maybe even 50 feet in the forest. Beautiful striped green and white to yellow striped bark. And unlike the other maples, its flowers are quite, well, large for a maple. They're about 1 inch and they dangle down in chains in the early spring. They're a greenish yellow and you got to look for them, but a 1 inch flower isn't too small. And they're really beautiful. And then when they fruit with the samars that are typical of maples, they are also hanging down in these chains that persist for quite a long time. That, like, I'm looking out the window a few striped maples now, and those samaras are still hanging on. And then the fall color, which this one hasn't turned yet, is like a light butter yellow. And the leaves are, oh, we didn't talk about the leaves. They're so large. It's also called goosefoot maple.
Yes.
Because its leaves are like big goose feet. They're really, really big leaves, bigger than the maples we're used to, like sugar and red maple.
Sure.
So the way they catch the light is gorgeous. And then in the fall, they turn a yellow, which just lights up when they're backlit by the sun. It's
right.
A beautiful tree.
So that's Acer pennsylvanicum, and it's a very common tree along the woodland edge where I live and into the beginning of the forest around me.
And people think it's weedy. You know, it's not. There are people who will argue with me, you know. I love it, but it's not this sort of, you know, statuesque tree. It's
right.
Great at the edge.
Right. So another is the pagoda dogwood. You know, people know Cornus florida, the flowering dogwood, and some of the other non-native, the Asian dogwoods, but and some of the shrub dogwoods like Cornus cerisea and so forth. But the pagoda dogwood, I'm going to say the wrong thing. Is it alternifolia?
Yeah, alternifolia, alternate leaf dogwood.
Cornus alternifolia. Yeah. And so that's just quickly, that's another small one that is distinctive, yes?
Yes. Well, like the other dogwood, like the flowering dogwood, Cornus florida, it has this very tiered branching, maybe even more tiered than the flowering dogwood, which is why it's called pagoda dogwood.
Right.
So even in the winter, it has this really lovely tiered structure. Beautiful, you know, typical dogwood, lovely, you know, green leaves. The flower is a cyme, I'm pretty sure. So it's more of like an umbel shape, like a flat umbrella shaped white flower.
Yes.
And, you know, important for pollinators, etc. And the fruit then is this blue black. And the birds love it. So it may go fast.
Right.
The fruit is held on these red, like pinkish bright red stalks. So even if the fruit's gone, you really get this flush of red on the whole shrub. And I, from my window at home, I have one that's just growing naturally and it's peeking out from the woodland edge. And I can see it from, I don't know, 50 yards away. I can see that red shining out. And then it's got a really beautiful, like maroonish, purplish, reddish fall color.
Right.
And I think in the article you mentioned, I had seen it near my house. I think it's natural, growing naturally as a hedge. And it's
so like a row of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Not a strictly pruned hedge,
like
boxwood, but lined up as a small tree, large shrub be kind of stature hedge.
Yeah. And it's not long lived. And there is something called gold fungus that some of them get up here, but they seed around a lot. So, they're going to proliferate around, not in a really aggressive way, but if you have one, you may have more. And once you know that really distinctive dogwood leaf, you can put a little deer fence around the one that you see coming up and encourage another one.
Right. And I know that you're a lover of gray birch. It's a little bit bigger, but give us just a quick lowdown on why you love gray birch so much.
Yeah, so I learned about gray birch from Daryl Morrison when I was working with him on some projects. It's such a great small tree for a grove. There's a really important book that really everybody should read. A short book called American Plants for American Gardens, written in the 1920s by Edith Roberts and Elsa Raymond, who were at Vassar. And they talk about different plant communities in the book. So it's really wonderful for designing and getting ideas. But they have a whole chapter on the gray birch community. And it's a small tree. It's Betula populifolia, which populifolia means it's got leaves that sort of shimmer in the wind like trembling aspen, a nice white bark, but it has blacker patches on it under the branches, blacker than, say, the paper birch. So in the winter, it's almost like, I'm stealing this line from American Plants for American Gardens, but it's almost like an etching against the snow.
Uh-huh.
And just it's a pioneer tree, so it's really great on tough sites. And, I was talking to you earlier another time where my mom just sold her house in northern New Jersey, and she had huge oaks that the new owners cut down. I think people are scared of the weather now and unpredictable nature. So a lot of these small trees that we're talking about feel like, the gray birch feels like a bigger tree, but it's not, and it won't get so big that it's going to be intimidating near your house.
So, like you said, a grove, and that's something that in certain spots that could be very inviting and sort of miniature, a grouping of these trees could be very inviting.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes it's hard to say whether, woody plants are, is it a large shrub? Is it a small tree? Shad, the amelanchiers, or pussy willows, the salix, come to mind. And a lot of native shrubs are really having a moment now or very soon. They're fruiting up to feed migrating or resident birds. They've got full foliage color. And as I said at the beginning, a lot of the ones we were going to mention, I hope, they may be native where we are, but they may also be native over a wider range. So again, I'll give some links to some range maps so people can look them up, if they're in the Mid-Atlantic or even the South in some cases and farther into the Midwest and beyond. I'm a winterberry, Ilex verticillata, and highbush blueberry freak. How about you?
Yes, totally.
See, totally. I just think you can't get enough of those, and the birds seem to agree with me.
Yeah, they're both... both great. Of course, for the Ilex verticillata, the winterberry, you have to plant a few males around also to get that fruit. Which one do you to love?
Well, the winter berries, I think that's a good point, that you need like a male for every, I don't know, you know, half a dozen or whatever females. I tuck the males away, not in a prominent spot, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, not too far away from the females, but, you know, and since I don't want them to be front and center. But the blueberries seem to do their own thing, and they have such incredible fall color. There's really nothing like the red of blueberries in fall, do you think?
Yeah, and they're just so much fun to eat.
No, the birds get all mine.
Yeah, oh, I have them growing. They grow naturally on my property. I have three different, I have low bush and then sort of a medium low bush and then the high bush. And I'm always finding them. They grow under power lines near me. They're a really tough plant. You know, supposedly they're finicky, but if you, I maybe they're hard to establish, mm-hmm. but you know, acidic soil, sun, they seem to take a lot of moisture too.
Yes. Yes.
And really wonderful for a hedge with that, with the fall color and beautiful green foliage, the high yes. bush. Yeah.
I have them in some big groupings, in some cases mixed in the winter berries and the high bush blueberries and also aronias, the choke berries. Do you have aronias up there on the mountain?
Yeah, that's a great plant. You know, we have a lot of the aronia melanocarpa, and that grows naturally up here too. We see it, you know, if we're not mowing an area, say there's a whole low bush blueberry area of the arboretum, and aronias coming up through there, the melanocarpa. It's denser. It's a great plant. I don't really use a lot of cultivars, but there's a great cultivar of melanocarpa called Viking, which is smaller, and it's just like masses of these beautiful black berries, you know, in the late summer. And then the aronias have great fall color. But I was looking at the red chokeberry yesterday.
Right.
Because we have that too. And I was thinking, if you want like a hedge, like privet hedges, I think of the great privet hedges like on Eastern Long Island, you can sort of see through them. They're almost like a screen that you can't see through, but maybe you can see through. And I think Aronia arbutifolia, the red choke berry, would be a great replacement for that because it's not as dense as the black choke berry and a lot of other of the hedge shrubs. So if you want an airier quality of your hedge, I'm thinking, I mean, we don't have it that way, but I'm thinking that might be nice. It's sort of more mm-hmm. upright, I think, than the mm-hmm. black. And has got, you know, beautiful, you know, glossy green foliage. The red berries are really striking. And, you know, there another cultivar, this one is Brilliantissima. And yes. That's just a great, you know, sharp red fall color.
Yeah.
Not too red, just beautiful.
The thing about picking native shrubs to use in your landscape for whether for a hedge or as a sort of a second, a layer below the canopy, an intermediate layer below your canopy trees or along the edge of the road or whatever, or just tucked into other beds, is that you can pick a range of fruit also that provides different nutrients at different times of year to mm-hmm. different birds. Mm-hmm. So like we were talking about the winterberry hollies and those have, they're more oil rich, the fruits, you know, they're not as sugary and so forth. And some of the fruits like the aronias, they don't ripen until very late. They have a lot of tannins, speaking of Tannersville, a lot of tannins in the fruit. And so it's very astringent, you know, and it's not
really
ready till
astringent.
And it's not ready till later. And so you can have a whole sequence of fruits with different nutrient values, you know, some to fatten up those birds for the migration or keep them warm in the winter, some, you know, just to give them more of a burst of fuel early. You know what I mean? It's great to sort of think about the different qualities of fruits as well. I love viburnums as well.
Oh my gosh.
And we have a lot of native viburnums.
We have so many native viburnums. I mean, you could do 10 shows, seriously, on the native viburnum.
Yeah.
There's one that I only learned about it, I think, in 2014. I was on a field trip. I was an intern at Chanticleer, and I was on a field trip. And we came across Viburnum lantanoides at a property we were visiting that was planted. And the reason that I didn't know about it, and I think a lot of listeners may not know about it, is again, it's sort of like the striped maple, but even more so. It's a cold, moist plant. I mean, it grows in the ravines up here. So there's, you know, cold water running down the ravine, mm-hmm. and there's mist coming up cold in the mornings. But it, maybe we can post some pictures. In the spring, it flowers really early. And like, so the first time I saw it up here, there's a lot of it up here. It almost looks like a hydrangea flower. It's quite large, and it's got the sterile flowers like a hydrangea does that are bigger. And then it's got inner fertile flowers. Yeah.
Yes.
And they stretch along the stem. Again, this is another plant people will argue with me about too. It's also called hobblebush because it layers itself. And if you're bushwhacking in the forest up here, you come across hobblebush, you have to get around it because it really does trip you up. But then the leaves are really large, almost like little saucers, and really thick, and almost like a blue green. They're so textural. And now the fall colors are just crazy. Like it's got every color, like Spirographic 70s t-shirt kind of thing. You know, it's just all over the place.
Well, so generally speaking, the viburnums have not only the spring flowers, but then fruit in late summer or fall, but also good fall color. I mean, Acerifolium, the maple leaf viburnum, mm-hmm. that's really shade tolerant, and that's a great understory plant.
Both of those, I would say, aren't really hedge plants because they're a little scrappier.
They're
great woodland, edge of the woodland, but not hedge.
Well, what I was talking about in the beginning, what I'm trying to do is create more edge around, you know, under the canopy trees and so forth. And, you know, there's so many different ones.
Cassinoides,
right.
Which is sort of a northern relative of Nudum.
Yes.
Really, really similar.
Yeah.
Hardier. I think it deals better with a heavy snow load in terms of branches breaking, I think. But amazing fall color. The berries of Nudum and Cassinoides, the way they go from like light pink to dark pink to blue with purple. They're crazy too. So
And some like Prunifolium, the fruit starts out sort of yellowish and turns black, the black claw viburnum. And you do get the viburnum leaf beetle up there.
Oh yeah, we do get it. And we do grow dentatum, which is really hammered by the leaf beetle. We also grow Opulus var Americanum, the high bush cranberry, which is not a cranberry, it's viburnum.
Right.
And what we do is we scout for the egg cases in the early spring, although I think you probably could start scouting in late fall.
And around November you could, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. So we usually do it like February, March, and it's really, you have to train your eye, but once you train your eye, you can do this and you cut back. You're going to cut back flower too, but I think you can beat back the population. And then we also spray with like a hort oil just before they leaf out. So they take a lot of work. That's dentatum and the high bush cranberry.
Right.
The others, I don't know what your experience is with Acerifolium. Doesn't really seem to bother it too much. And then the others that we're planting, knock on wood, they seem okay.
Yeah. And what I do is I have the cranberry bush one, and I use it as almost like a trap crop. And I know I'm going to get all my egg cases over there and all my damage over there. I have it out of the way, a couple of plants, like a farmer would put a trap crop.
Yeah, that's a great
away from
idea.
Its field. Yeah. And that's where I go and cut off the egg cases in November, December, January, February, March, you know? Mm-hmm. So in the last minute or so, we only have a minute or two left. If people have a moist spot, is buttonbush something that we could be growing?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and in standing water.
Moist. So tell me the name of it and what it's.
Cephalanthus.
Yeah, cephalanthus, right.
The thing about buttonbush is it leaps out late. So we luckily realized that. And at the Arboretum, we planted it at the far end of the rain garden. So you don't really know that it looks dead. And then when it does leaf out after everything else, it's got this chartreuse, light green, gorgeous leaf. So it really stands out from far away. But then you have to get close to it because those like little Sputnik flowers, like 1-inch, yeah, like pin cushion, but round circular flowers that persist through the winter. They're great. It's a great shrub, beautiful form, beautiful shape, and really takes wet. Sun.
Well, so many possibilities, Mark Wolf from Mountaintop Arboretum. Of course, the time always goes too fast, and we're going to have 10 more conversations. And okay, we're going to, as I said, we'll have a giveaway of the book 21 Trees about the Arboretum and the Education Center with the transcript of the show. I'm glad to talk to you again today. And now, of course, I have more plants on my list that I have to go find for my project. So thanks a lot, Mark.
Me too. Thank you, Margaret.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and at Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.